your life isn't over because someone else has left. I still have a lot of life to live and a lot of hope to give to other people.
Hi, welcome to Resonate, Conversations and Life Lessons from Rancho La Puerta. I am your host, Barry. Our guests come to the ranch for so many different reasons, and at different times in their lives, there are different reasons. Some come because they're celebrating an event, a milestone birthday, an anniversary. Others come because they're going through some sort of transition, maybe a career change, maybe they become an empty nester, maybe there's a relationship change. Others come because they want to reset their health and their spiritual life and reconnect with themselves and what's important to them. Often guests come to the ranch to find peace and space to deal with loss and grief in their lives. Today I'm joined by Julie Green. She has written a book called 1,000 Little Memories. It's a courageous book, and Julie shares her journey of rebuilding life and finding joy again after the devastating loss of her 19-year-old son to suicide. She shares how she was able to find light in the darkest of circumstances and honor those lost while still choosing to live her life fully. Julie's vulnerability and honesty about grief, her healing, and the long path towards hope offers comfort and guidance to anyone who is facing profound loss.
Hi, Julie. Thanks for joining me today. I appreciate you spending your time.
And my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
Right. And so you first came to the ranch in 2019 before the pandemic hit. And actually this week you're here as a nurse helping cover for our medical team, correct?
I am. Yeah.
Right. So I know that, I don't know if you feel like I feel the ranch is a pretty magical place, and it can be a healing place for a lot of people. Our guests come here for when they're going through all different things in their life. And a lot of people that come to the ranch are going through some stages of grief. And, you are now a grief counselor. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm a grief facilitator, grief recovery method facilitator. I'm not a counselor, but I've been trained in that program to help guide people through processing their grief.
And the catalyst for you, sadly, was something really tragic happening in your life. And I'm sure it's probably hard to talk about, but maybe you could let us tell us what happened.
Yeah. A year after my first visit here, everything was going normal, and then I had a family, two kids. My son had just gotten accepted into college on water polo scholarship, and was really happy for his direction in life. And he just suddenly, over time, he had some things happen that caused him increase in stress. Just a lot of different things. But it ended up causing him to have a real personality change. And I wasn't sure what was causing it. And we did try to get him help. He was taken into a facility, a psychiatric facility. And we thought that he was getting help at that point. But we were going to try to get him to another, bring him to closer to home, because he was in Northern California, and he ended up leaving the facility and killing himself. And it was just so shocking. So the reason that, I became a grief recovery method specialist is because I went through that program after my son died, and it helped me so much. It's such a hard time and such a dark place to be in after you've had such a big loss. And now I really, part of my healing is helping other people. And that's why I did the training for that.
It's been 5 years.
It'll be 5 years on September 5th. Yeah.
And I know that one of the things that you have done that I don't know if it helped you get through the process, but to help other people too, is you wrote a book that just came out this past February. Yes. Called a Thousand Little Memories. And there's a thousand pictures of your son on the book, right?
Yeah, on the cover. That was how we came to the title. I loved this artist who created this picture for me of my son made up of a thousand pictures. And I was explaining how each picture holds a little memory. And so then I'm like, oh, that's my book, A Thousand Little Memories. And it is really like when you lose somebody close to you, you just start remembering. And the photographs are such an important thing. It's like
right.
The only thing left of their existence, you know, tangible proof of their existence are the photos.
So I know that in the book, because I read your book, and you go through the process of from the first time you heard it to maybe seeing some light on the other side. Or finding purpose and some hope again. But I would imagine for most people that suffer such an intense loss, there must be a period where there's just nothing you can do.
I'm a backpacker, so I explained my book like a backpacker going over four mountains, a pilgrimage. The subtitle is a Mother's Brave Pilgrimage to Find Joy After Traumatic Loss. And so that was my pilgrimage through grief. The first part of it, the first mountain, is shock. And it's a time when you're really like, it's an injury. You know, it's an injury mm-hmm. that your brain and your heart is broken and you can't really make sense of it. And so you go into I went into this numbing time where I just wanted to not think about it, to numb it. And it was excruciating, you know, just thinking about the memories and the guilt of, I felt like, it was my fault. And I just had a lot of pain around that. And so when something does first happen for someone, my advice is just to be there for them and to listen to them and to just be a listening ear and being present. That's really the most important thing you can do.
Yeah. One thing that I read from your book is that, you know, there's a lot of people that say a lot of things. But the reality is there's nothing that someone's going to be able to say to you or do for you that's going to take that pain away. So right. I think that's a good thing for someone. I think you said in the book, if for someone just to be with you and say, I'm here for you, whatever you need, without trying to make sense out of something that is senseless.
Right. Yes, definitely.
So, yeah. And I thought that was really beautiful and good advice, because I think people don't know. I feel like in our society, I don't know if you feel this way too, but people mm-hmm. don't want to talk about painful things. And sometimes it's almost like you don't want to have to be a part of it with another person because you might take on some of that pain.
Yeah. I think it is really a part of our culture that we avoid uncomfortable things. And I think people do shy away from that. They want really you to get back to normal as fast as possible. And people say things to you like, you know, oh, you're so strong and you're going to get through this. And, you know, just allowing someone to really feel their emotions and be there present with them and just really embracing that and being comfortable with it is not something that a lot of people are used to doing, and that is what you need.
Right.
And so just that's what I would advise people if you know someone that is going through a big loss, is just to don't say, oh, I'll give them time by themselves, you know. Like people usually, you know, you need someone with you. And if they do have someone with you, sometimes people don't want anyone else. But as long as they have at least one person or a few people that can be there with them.
Right.
It's really feeling. Yeah.
You had mentioned that initially, and I think it's probably normal when people have loss and grief, is that you want to just numb it. And what did you do to numb your pain, and how long did that phase take?
Well, my favorite thing was drinking wine. I drank a lot of wine. I love wine. I still do. But I was abusing it. I was drinking it, like, sometimes a bottle, a whole bottle by myself, just watching Netflix. And that was the other thing, just sitting, vegging on my couch and watching TV, watching Netflix, show after show, and drinking wine. But then after a while, it wasn't really helping me. It was interfering with my sleep, and it was... I gained, you know, eating food to comfort food and just not really living mindfully, for sure. Just trying to get through it.
What got you off the couch and to stop doing the wine?
You know, I don't remember one thing that did it, but I think it was just a realization, like, this isn't working. I wasn't feeling good. I think I saw a picture of myself. It was kind of a wake up call, like, wow, I look really bad. And I don't want to go down the rabbit hole of, people can die after you lose somebody if you don't take care of yourself. So I started realizing, you know what, I need help. So I reached out for therapy. And that was when I started making a switch and focusing more on getting help and healing and processing it. So it was a gradual thing, and I don't know the exact timing of it. Yeah.
So you also in your book talk about there's rituals and techniques that help to help you through it. What are some of the rituals that you used?
One of the things that I talk about in my book is something that helped me a lot that someone told me was doing the box breathing. It's a technique that helps move your sympathetic nervous system, which is being triggered by the grief and causing you to be in that fight or flight mode. And the box breathing is breathing in for a count of four, holding it for a count of four, breathing out, you know, four-sided breathing. And that helps to shift over into parasympathetic, where you can think more clearly, and it doesn't react. Your body's not reacting as much. Started doing that regularly, and then as far as rituals, I did start walking on the beach and collecting seashells, and that was really healing for me, because just collecting something and being out in nature. And I'm fortunate to live right by the beach, so I was able to hear the ocean, see the ocean every day. Find shells, find feathers, just little things that became meaningful to me, and started collecting them. And by doing that every day, it was the exercise, getting outside in the sunshine, being in nature. Those things are really healing. And so that helped me.
In your book, you mentioned that Jack, your son, you think that, you know, sometimes he sends you messages, and dragonflies is one of the things that you brought up. And I've heard from other people that dragonflies is something that people often associate with someone who's moved on.
Mm-hmm. I did. You know, the day after Jack's funeral, my parents had a reception in their backyard, gathering after his funeral. And the next day I went over to help just clean up. And a big, beautiful, iridescent blue dragonfly just came flying down, and he went right in front of my face, and he paused, and then he went to the other side. He did that about four times, and I just felt like, wow, I don't know. It just really made me feel like Jack was there, and that just made me feel like his little spirit animal or something was the dragonfly. And I do see dragonflies when I go other places. I've seen them here over the last few days. I've seen dragonflies, and I see them at times when I'm thinking about Jack. All of a sudden, I'll see a dragonfly, and it just gives me comfort.
And in your book, you also mentioned that you did a hiking trip to Utah, and there was a group of dragonflies, but a swarm of dragonflies that showed up.
Yeah. I went on a trip not that long after Jack died, some friends invited me to go with them. And I didn't, at first I was reluctant. I didn't think I could do it. And it ended up being such a wonderful trip. Again, just being in nature and being with people and kind of forcing myself to do something, even though I wasn't sure how I would be. But there was, we hiked through what's called the Narrows. I don't know if you know about that, but it's this beautiful gorge that it's in the water and you're walking over rocks with a big stick. And we sat for lunch, and where we had lunch, it was just beautiful. And we were just swarmed around us with dragonflies, just swarmed around us. And we were just all of us were just like, wow, this is really special. Mm-hmm. And, felt his presence.
How often are you thinking of him at now at this, you know?
That's interesting because, you know, I do think of him. At first, it was really, I have to say, torturous, because every single thing I looked at would lead to me thinking about him in a really sad way. I mean, I would see somebody with a yellow shirt on, and then it would just trigger like, oh, Jack loved yellow shirts. And then, oh, it's so, you know, just like go into the spiral of like sadness. And I couldn't really control it. And so with doing the grief recovery processing, and also I did EMDR treatments, and just processing the grief, it's gotten me to a point where I think about Jack, but it makes me most of the time feel happy. You know, I'll think about him, he'll make me smile. I'll think of good things about not just the last 3 months of his life that were so sad, but I'm able to think about like his whole life and how much good there was, because he had a good life, and we had a lot of good times together. And when I think of him, when I'm doing something, a lot of times I will just, and still, like if I see somebody, a young man, like today when I was in one of the lectures, I saw a young man, and he's about the height that Jack was. And I just, you know, it just kind of make me think of him for a minute. But, you know, so probably pretty frequently through the day, but it's not a sadness now.
Mm-hmm. How would you, what advice would you give someone for finding the right therapist or the right kind of therapy?
I would just say, call your, if you hopefully have insurance, call your insurance company first and see what's available, and get recommendations for somebody who knows how to work with someone in grief. Mm-hmm. And there are programs out there that are free also, like Grief Share, which is helpful to be able to talk about what you're going through at the beginning. But I highly recommend the grief recovery method, which is something you can find online and find with a specialist in your area. You can also do it through Zoom. And that is really what helped me the most. And so they're worldwide also. You can find them anywhere.
Is that an individual kind of therapy, or is it group, or is it a mix?
It can be. You can do it one-on-one. I did it in a group. It was during COVID, so it was in a group, but it was on Zoom. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure how that would be, but it ended up being fine. And I found through processing the loss of Jack, I also had other things in my past that I had not dealt with. And so I was able to actually process 6 major losses from my life. I had actually lost my brother when he was 19, and I had never processed his death. I moved away and just kind of forgot, you know, just like went on with my life, but it was still there, you know? And so when you can't really run away from grief, you need to feel your emotions. You need to be able to process through it. And so that it's not hiding and going to come back some other way or cause some kind of breakdown in your body.
For those who don't know, what is EMDR therapy?
It's eye movement, desensitizing and reprocessing is the term. And it's a way of processing through movement of your eyes. It's very kind of, it doesn't sound real sophisticated when you explain it, but the way it works is like if when you're sleeping in REM sleep, your eyes move back and forth, rapid eye movement. And the doctor, Francine Shapiro, she discovered this, helped her. She did kind of an experiment on herself. It's in her book. And I talk about it in my book, but it's a way a practitioner can help you by your eyes moving back and forth. And there's more to it than that, but that's basically what it is. It helps you to take an area of your brain that is, they've shown on MRI that a part of your brain that is firing in trauma, but after doing the EMDR, it's not firing. It's like in a different area. So it does help to process trauma, and especially like post-traumatic stress. So people that have really are stuck in grief or trauma, it really is remarkable in how it works.
I have read also that and talked to people that the part of the grief process is you almost feel guilty if you feel happy or you feel joyful in the face of the loss.
Yeah. At first, I was invited to a wedding of my niece, and I didn't know how it was going to be to feel happy for her getting married, to be there and not, I don't want to pull the happiness away from the event and pull, you know, and I ended up going, and I found that I could actually hold both things at the same time. I could be happy for her, but then also feel sad and have tears in my eyes because my son wasn't there. But I was able to handle it. But it does, I was, you know, feeling that way at first, but I then started realizing that I have to still live my life and feel happiness in my life. And I didn't want to move through my life feeling bad about feeling happy. So that was one of the things that I did have help with going through that grief recovery method. It helped me just, and also finding a life coach who helped me to work on mindset. That was another big thing that was a big shift for me. To be able to say, I have a choice in this and how I feel.
Well, this is my first time at the ranch. And I came because a friend invited me. She is struggling because she is a recent widow. And when we booked this trip, I didn't know that I would have lost my brother in just the 2 months before. It's a little hard to talk about still, but I thought that maybe coming to the ranch would help me to heal. And I was right. I had no idea how much I was right. The other day we were up hiking on the Coyote Trail, and the rocks all are so, first of all, they're beautiful, but they're also very evocative. You can see what you want to in them. Some of them have names and some of them don't. And I saw suddenly a set of two rocks, huge rocks. One of them was a big, almost a half moon, like a solid half moon. And the other one next to it was like a crescent moon, kind of bent into it with a space in between. And it looked like the crescent moon one could just fall off the edge of the mountain. But no, it was anchored to the half moon by rock at the bottom. And I took one look at that and I thought, big brother, little sister. I'm sorry, I'm breaking up. And I just started to cry. It was a way of, I don't think I've ever been quite so open to nature speaking to me about something important to me as I have been here. It's an extraordinary place where you look and you seek and you find. And you also try things you never tried before. I'm not much of a hiker, but I did hike here. I'm really not much of an artist, but I tried watercolor painting here. And in fact, after we stop talking here, I am probably going to go down to the watercolor studio, and I'm going to try to reproduce Big Brother, Little Sister in watercolor. And I hope I can, because I'd love to hang it in my house and remember my big brother.
I hope you're enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply. I hope you're enjoying today's podcast as much as I am. To learn more about our wonderful presenters and exciting weeks coming up at the ranch, go to rancholaporta.com and check out our events calendar. Make sure to mention the podcast when making your reservation to take advantage of a special offer. Some restrictions may apply.
So you went to therapy first, and then you found a life coach after that? Or did you do them simultaneously?
Yeah. No, I went through the therapy. So going back to the mountains that I described in my book, the first one being the mountain of shock. So that was when I was going through the rituals and really just being feeling like I was in a state of shock. But then the next mountain is the mountain of hope. And that is where I found therapy. But I also found my life coach, Lisa Jimenez, who wrote a book called Mindset Reset. And I decided to join her mindset group. And that helped me get to the next mountain, which is the mountain of recreation. So I started recreating who I was, because really when my son died, the person I was before he died was gone. I was a new person. I was a different person. And now I realized I needed to recreate who I wanted to be going forward. Mm-hmm. And there's something called post-traumatic growth, which is something that can happen after a big event in your life that could devastate you if you let it, or it can propel you into a purpose that you never thought you would have. And that is really what has happened in my life. And so meeting Lisa Jimenez really helped me in that, having the life coaching and saying yes to opportunities to create who I wanted to be.
And then what's the fourth mountain?
The fourth mountain is contribution. And so that writing my book is part of that, and also becoming the grief recovery method specialist. So then I'm giving back. And I also am a faith community nurse. I was asked to be the parish nurse at my church. And then that has enabled me to create youth mental health fairs, which is really something that I wanted to do to help other parents and kids understand the importance of mental health and to see what things can contribute to a breakdown in mental health, to really keep an eye on that. And so those things are, and then also coming to the ranch and having the opportunity now to be the first aid volunteer here this week is just been, I feel like it's full circle, you know, mm-hmm. just being able to help other people. And some of the hikes I've gone on when I'm here, I always seem to connect with someone who has also gone through a loss. And now I just feel like I'm an ambassador for helping people get through grief, and just, you know, reading what I went through hopefully can help them.
Another thing that I read in your book that after Jack died, that your husband and you separated.
Yeah.
It seems like that's kind of the loss of a child puts a lot of strain, and a lot of people end up separating.
It is a high statistic of marriages ending after the loss of a child. We did have some things going on prior to Jack's dying. But just really my tolerance, I guess, for being able to deal with things had changed. And so I needed to just really focus on myself. And I chose to separate from my husband. We had been together for over 30 years. He was my best friend. I never thought that our relationship would crack, but it did. And unfortunately, it has ended in divorce. We're not complete through it, but we've kind of gone in different directions. And, you know, I gave it 3 years hoping that it would repair. But, you know, at some point, I have to just move forward. And, you know, there's not, it's a difficult thing, you know, and everybody, you know, people that have gone through it and stayed together, right?
Right.
It's so much stress that it makes all the other things in your, the little things that bother you, it just makes it hard to deal with.
Is there an awareness, a more intense awareness of being the true to the person that you were put on this planet to be?
Yeah. And that's really what it is, that I feel like I was living kind of with blinders on and not noticing things, and really like not noticing the stress level that I was under. And now I feel like I am living a much more authentic life and who I really am. So it has given me this opportunity to live a more authentic life. And so I am grateful for that. And even though I would never, it's such a strange thing, I would never wish this on anybody, but things happen in your life and you have to figure out a way to deal with them. Your life isn't over because someone else has left. You still I still have a lot of life to live and a lot of life to give, you know, hope to give to other people.
There seems to be like this negative thing attached to suicide. And would you have thoughts on that? I'm sure you do.
I feel like, you know, it used to be, people still say committed suicide, it used to be considered a crime. Although who are you going to punish after the person's gone? So it seems really a strange thing. But I think it was a way for them to, maybe society, to scare people not to do that. I'm not sure why that word was attached to it, but also biblical, people thought biblically in some religions that it was a sin, a mortal sin. And the understanding of mental health has changed so much. And my understanding is that my son was really suffering an acute brain trauma of some sort that was changing his behavior and his thought patterns. And he was in a lot of pain. And so I don't know. He didn't leave a note or anything. I don't know exactly what was going through his mind at the time. And I think he just didn't feel like he had a way out. He felt hopeless. And and I don't know if that's what he was feeling. It's really, you know, hard for me to completely understand why he did it. But I don't feel like, you know, people are afraid to talk about it, even like to say the word suicide, but it's gotten better. And I think that asking someone, if you know someone that is struggling, asking them if they feel suicidal is not going to make them feel suicidal or make them, you know, kill themselves. But what it will do is allow them to be able to talk about it. So mentioning, you know, asking someone if they have, do you have a plan? Because sometimes people do feel like, oh, they're hopeless and they don't know what they're going to do. But they might even think like, I want to kill myself, but they don't really have a plan. But if somebody does have a plan in place, then that is, you know, really like an emergency, because you need to get them help. There's a suicide emergency line that you can call 988 from anywhere and get help for someone or if you yourself are feeling like that, you have somebody that can talk to you. And talking to someone, being with someone, it really can change things, and it really decreases the risk of the person going through it quite a bit, like a lot. Yeah. I don't know the percentage, the exact numbers, but yeah, it's very helpful.
I read also that you, I don't know if it was, was it a walk or a run that was in support of a suicide effort?
Yeah, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, they have a walk out of the dark, I think it's Walk Out of the Darkness, I believe is the name of it. And some places they do it overnight. It used to be like an overnight walk. And the one I went to, it was on a college campus, and it was just getting together to be with other people that had either attempted suicide or had lost a loved one to suicide, and just to be, to have, you know, camaraderie with the other people, just to be able to be with other people that have gone through this, and also to raise awareness and to raise money to help with programs.
I also, you have a strong faith, and I think that you, in your book, you talk about how that has really helped you a lot. Having a spiritual practice, do you find that to be helpful and important for people?
Well, for me, it's been really everything. I have always had a strong belief in God, and I went to church growing up, but I really, it was like Sunday, it was in a box, you know, it was like compartmentalized, but I feel now like I'm really walking side by side, like with God. Like I feel like this, the spirit around me all the time. I know some people have a crisis of faith after losing someone and blaming God. Some people have that experience, and I never did. I felt like just supported. And I have actually, that's part of my daily ritual now, is just having gratitude and reading. I'm reading the Bible for the first time in my life from cover to cover, because I've always wanted to do that. And just learning, you know, it's just for part of my own morning practice.
Right.
So that it puts me in a place of changing things, where I'm focusing more on positivity first thing in the morning, doing a little meditation or praying and some journaling, rather than going and turning on the TV and getting, you know, bombarded with negativity. I'm choosing things that really bring a lot of peace into my life. And so everything that I can do, I practice yoga, I go running, go down to the beach regularly, coming to Rancho La Puerta. And, you know, all these things really add up. You know, it's not really just one thing. It's really shifting your life to be in a more positive way. And that's really, you know, helped me a lot.
I haven't had the kind of loss you've had, but for me personally, I think that, like, knowing that this body is not who we are, that something goes on, because you believe that he's still around, right?
Well, in quantum physics, which I'm interested in, and the energy, actually the man who made my, Lauren Kramer, who created the cover art for my book, he told me the first time I talked to him about energy, you know, being in our biosphere, the earth, and that all the energy that has ever been here is still here.
Right.
And so I've heard this before, but just the way he explained it, it just really hit home for me. And I know, just being a nurse and with science, like, energy does not disappear. It changes, it moves. Right. So the energy that's within our body, that is our spirit when we die, you know, I really believe that it is somewhere that we can't see, but it is still around. And for me, I feel like the energy of Jack when I think about him. And sometimes things will happen and I'll just think, like, Like, our computers were giving us trouble when we were sitting down to do this podcast. And I'm like, oh, that's probably Jack playing tricks on us, you know, and just it feels like his energy is around me. So, yeah. But,
Do you feel that Jack wants you to be happy?
I do, because he was a very happy-go-lucky person until the last 3 months. And he was a person people called him Megawatt Smile, because he would come into the room and he was 6'4". He was gorgeous. You know, I have to say I was his mom, but he was just a beautiful human being physically, but then also in his spirit. He was just very loving and kind, and he would look out for the underdog. And he would, you know, if somebody was sitting by themselves at the lunch table, I heard stories from people that he would go and say, hey, come and join us. And just that kind of a person. And so, you know, I know that he would want me to carry on and carry his loving, happy spirit in my heart. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do.
Do you have rituals to do to honor his memory? I read in your book that, like, the first Christmas you set his picture on a chair at the table with everyone. Do you still do that? And what are some of the things that you do to honor his memory or keep him alive in your heart?
I don't put his picture there at Christmas anymore, but I did the first year. But I do have an angel and a blue candle that I do set. I set a place for him at the table. And I even have a Christmas cracker, which is our tradition, an English tradition of, like, you know, in the morning we do these Christmas crackers. And so I have one there for him. So we always, like, my daughter and I will, like, pull the cracker to see what Jack got. And so we just, you know, keep him as part of our family tradition still, because he is still part of our family. And, you know, on the day of his birthday, my daughter and I, the first year after he died, we went to Disneyland, the two of us, because Jack and Tori and I used to go all the time, the three of us, to Disneyland. And so we're trying to make that our yearly tradition. But it might be morphing into something different. But every year I keep that day, his birthday, free, to do something to think about him that brings joy to my life, that just to remember him in a positive way.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And I so appreciate you sharing. Is there any final thoughts that you want to share with listeners that might be going through grief and loss?
Yeah, I would just say that it is such a hard time when you're first in it, and it's hard to even know what's going to come out of it. But just to know that there is hope that you will find joy again, to work for it. But it doesn't just happen. You have to actively participate in finding a new path. And so I encourage people to not just, you know, there's three choices from this book, The Happiness Advantage. I read that there you have three choices, and I think this is so true, that you have one of just staying the same. You can keep doing the same thing over and over again and really, like, staying in the grief. Or some people do go down in, like, despair, and some people even die from, like, a broken heart or just medical conditions that come from the grief not being processed. And the third choice is to move up and out of it, and that's what I've chosen. And I want people to know that it is something you can do. It is a choice. And so I encourage people to please, like, choose to move up and to find things to help you.
Can they find your book on Amazon?
It is on Amazon. And it's also on Barnes & Noble.
Okay. And again, it's called A Thousand Little Memories. And so I found it very inspiring reading your book.
Thank you.
And I know others will too. And I really appreciate you being willing to share such an intimate story with us. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Barry.
This life is full of joy and sorrow and everything in between. I don't think being a human, we can escape this lifetime without experiencing loss and grief. I appreciate Julie being willing to share her story with us today, and hope it can bring peace to those of us who have experienced loss. Our co-founder, Deborah, says that she believes our loved ones who have departed would not want us to be sad. Instead, their wish is that we live full lives. Julie admits that grief has stages and we all have to go through them. She has found meaning and purpose in her life again through helping others manage their grief and by sharing her journey. She believes that grief is always going to be a part of her, and she also believes that you can hold joy and grief at the same time. I feel grateful to have spent this time with Julie today. Until I see you again, this is Barry wishing you health and some joy each day.